We've a live one this morning, have we? I'll bring you before the Swords and Scrolls podcast, where a rotating rogues gallery joins me in discussing comics and more in the genre of heroic fantasy. I am Jared Savitas, your guide in the Battle of the Barbarians. And joining me today in discussing this battle is the Niord to my Gorm, Jason Farrell of the Douglas and Dragons podcast. Jason, I am pleased to have you back on the show.
I've never been more honored than to be called the Niord.
Okay, we did Valley of the Worm.
Do I live through that? I can't remember.
Niord?
Yeah. He makes it, right? No?
I can't remember. I can't remember if it's a tragic ending or not.
I can't remember either.
How dare we not remember the Valley of the Worm?
I don't know. If it was Conan, I'd definitely be dead because all of his friends always end up dead at the end. Or Elric. Any of the things we've done.
Niord lives on in James Allison, so it's all right, man. He's the forever hero. We discussed it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Jason, we are here today to talk about Conan the Barbarian issues number 50 and 51 from 1975. This is the end of the adaptation of the Gardner F. Fox novel Kothar and the Conjurer's Curse. Jason, mm-hmm. are you familiar with Mr. Fox?
Not directly. I've heard the name for a long time, mostly in the context of Flash comics.
Okay, great.
I know he wrote a lot of comics, but they were old superhero comics that, for the most part, I haven't read.
Okay, me neither.
I like his name, though. I like the name Gardner Fox.
Now, are you familiar at all with his character, Kothar the Sellsword?
Not really. Only by barbarian osmosis.
Kothar is a very serviceable barbarian character. If you are cracked out on sword and sorcery pulp novels, he is a character who's interesting to take a look at. I've enjoyed some things about his stories. He's a little questionable at times in his actions, but Kothar
is he rapey?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
The stories we're going through today, there are parts of it that were omitted from the adaptation because of Kothar is pretty ass grabby. So,
yeah, comics code said nope.
What's your history with like the Conan comics? I mean, because we talked Howard before.
I don't have the illustrious history that you do, but mm-hmm. I did like Conan from a very early comics reading age. Like every comic that I bought for the first 15, 20 years of my life, I just got assorted issues. I had some issues of Conan the Barbarian. I had some issues of Conan the King.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not have any magazines, which makes me sad in retrospect because I think I would have really liked the magazines.
Yeah, they're the best part of this whole
thing. Yeah. And I think I would have thought so, but I just like, sometimes I have blinders and I think I was just like, magazine, that's not the same. That's not what I want. I want a comic. Little knowing, you know. So, yeah, I had a bunch of issues. I would say probably somewhere around maybe 10 issues, 8, 10 issues. And I love them all. I love that stuff from the beginning. And I feel like also Conan issues tended to feel pretty substantial to me. You were getting a lot of stuff in one issue. So I like that about it. We have talked about the fact that I, you know, watch the movies and stuff like that. But my comics history of that is pretty much that. And honestly, then so it didn't really, I never really went back and bought a bunch of the Marvel Conan issues. I'm not exactly sure why, to be honest. I think it was my off air. We were talking about the shiny element of our personalities. And I think it was that it was known to me. So I wasn't like excited by the newness of it. But I did buy a lot of the newer Conan comics, like mm-hmm. when Dark Horse had the license for years and years. And I bought lots of those, the Kerry Nord, Kurt Busiek stuff and all that. So I did eventually get lots of Conan comics.
Excellent. When it comes to like the Marvel Color series, grabbing random issues, I think is almost more rewarding than reading it straight through. The kind of the shotgun approach to the characters is not a bad one. Just picking up randos here and there. A guy that has recently gotten into the Savage Sword of Conan the Barbarian magazine, mm-hmm. and
he's like, "Where do I start? What do I do?" And I was like, "Just grab something when you see. If you see a rad cover, grab it." Like, because the
Yeah.
book is going to be typically separate adventures, and like then there's, you know, you've got articles and
Adaptations of the stories and
yeah, and you
stuff
got
and
backups, sometimes two backups, pinups. Like, they're rad. Doesn't matter. Just, you know, just dive in. It's kind of the way to do it. Now, also during this Battle of the Barbarians, Wolf the Barbarian from Atlas Comics has entered into the ring. Interestingly enough, the months that issues 50 and 51 come out, Conan the Barbarian, there is no issue of Wolf. And thusly, that's why, Jason, you and I, we're not going to talk about him.
We're not gonna
But
do well.
are you familiar with him aside from this little project?
No, I'm gonna listen to the other ones that you do so that I can find out how he's different. So the ones we are doing, they're Conan issues, but they are adaptations of a Kothar story or part of a Kothar story. You've read the novel on which these are based.
Yes.
I have not. So I'm at a huge disadvantage there. So I'm going to lean on you too to like, if there are ways in which Conan is not the same as Kothar, like I don't even know if they've made Conan more Kothar in this, or if they've let him be Conan and it's almost the same thing anyway, or if they've let him be Conan and it's quite different than he acts in the novel. It's like, I'm going to lean on you for all of that.
Once we get into it, something might jump out at me, but like when you say that, immediately I think of some actions that happened in earlier issues of this adaptation. Typically, in the beginning of the adaptation, he does do some things that the Marvel Conan character would not have done before the adaptation of this book. So it does happen where Conan does a couple things, and I'm like, well, that is straight a Kothar thing that he just did. I don't care for it on Conan.
Right, because this has got Conan on the cover. Yeah. Interesting. I didn't feel like nothing jumped out at me as I was reading like that Conan's doing that. Like, not really. Although maybe as we go through it, I'll notice something, but
Well, let's waste no more time with our Barbarian Babble. So we're starting here with Conan the Barbarian number 50 from 1975. The title is The Dweller in the Pool, which we talked last night. I think is a super rad title. The cover is by Gil Kane and Klaus Janson. It is written and edited by Roy Thomas, drawn by John Buscema, with Dick Giordano and Terry Austin inks. Janice Cohen, colorist, John Costanza, letterer. Again, mentioned before, this is the adaptation of The Conjurer's Curse. Before we get into the synopsis, I found some synopses online, and I tweaked them a little bit. But then, as I got the synopses for these two issues are big, because especially in issue 50, a lot of story gets pushed. And it's crammed within about 10 pages. And then it is bookmarked by crazy combats. So it's such a thick issue. And then the next issue is wrapping everything up, and a lot of stuff happens as well. And so these synopses are really long. And I was kind of like tweaking them and making them my own in a way. And then I was like, these are too long. I'm just going to read them. I'm giving up. I can talk about them as we go. I don't
Okay.
need to waste any more time on
All
it.
right.
But this cover, what do you think of this cover, Jason? We have the dweller in the pool is bursting out of the underground lake, and it is lashing its crazy tongue, forked tongue at Conan and Stefania, I believe who it is, chained to the
Yeah.
cavern wall.
Because yeah, the tongue has prongs, according to him. It's good composition. We kind of talked about this last night a little bit, but so I wonder who designed the dweller.
Gil or John?
Gil or John?
Yeah, it's a good question.
It looks more or less the same. You know, it's not exactly the same, but it looks similar. The Gil Kane cover image really reminds me a lot of Man Thing. Like if Man
Oh.
Thing was a snake.
Mm-hmm.
Little tubules coming out of his back. He looks very goofy. And I think it's just like if you create a design that has a big schnoz, which he does, and a big giant open face like that, which he looks like he's got lips.
Big
You know,
kissy
it's
lips.
yeah. He looks like he's like, "Hey, Conan," you know. Blah, blah, blah,
Yep.
blah. Yeah, let me lick you. It's a little goofy.
I agree. I did not notice the man thing ish about it, but it is straight up the man thing brow and nose with a single eye. It's crazy now that I didn't see it. Bushima from time to time will do these really goofy monsters, these beasts like this that I'm just like, John, that's not great. That's not great. For as great as you are, that is not great. And this happens to be one of those creatures for me. But yeah, I do like the cover. I think the cover is a classic 1970s Conan cover.
It gets
Awesome.
your it does. I think it would serve the purpose that a cover is supposed to serve, which is to pop off the stand, the spinner rack, and be like, "Ooh, what's going on here? The hell is that?"
But yeah, Stefania is not chained up to the wall during that scene, so this is a
No,
lie.
she's nobody's chained up, but there's another girl that's almost like more in that position in the interior. I also do like, I didn't actually notice this at first. He's described it later as having a two-pronged tongue. And I thought that for a second, I thought he didn't have a two-pronged tongue on the cover, but he absolutely does. One of the prongs is like getting ready to wrap around Conan's leg, and the other one is all the way over, wrapped a couple of times around her arm. That's a great touch right there. That's really well done.
Each prong can move independently. It's really gross.
It is. It's like tentacles are always gross. I have actually have a like a primal feeling about tentacles, like suckers. They creep me out. And this is like a tentacle, but out of the mouth. It's a tongue tentacle, which is not any better.
You get some other tentacles later on, Jason, so in the next
I
issue. So
do.
man, you're just loving
I'm
it.
happy. Oh, yeah.
All right, here's our synopsis. The Dark Dweller, Pthasis. It's spelled Pthasiass.
Yeah, Pathosius, Pathosius. Sounds good to me.
I'm just gonna call him the Dweller. So the Dark Dweller attacks Conan and his companions and manages to devour the nameless serving wench. The Dweller is resistant to Conan's sword blows, but during the combat, he notices that the Dweller avoids their carnivorous garden. Conan maneuvers the Dweller closer to the plants, and the tendril vines entangle and consume the Dweller. Conan and Stefania retreat with the amulet to reunite with Lupulina. The wolf woman does indeed know Stefania and reveals the girl's history. Stefania is the daughter of Thormund, the Lord of Falkar, whose demise was plotted by the wizards Thalcades and Elvirium. Lupulina was once called Samandra and was the lady in waiting to Kresala, Stefania's mother. She helped the wizards plot. But having a change of heart saved the baby Stefania. She gave her to the wizard Zoquenor instead of killing her as the wizards wished. Lord Thormund was killed in an accidental rock slide, and the wizard's puppet,
Yeah,
Themis,
accidental.
yeah, and the wizard's puppet, Themis Herklar, was put on the throne. But Herklar also had a change of heart, and it is he that is meant to have the amulet of protection from Conan. Lupulina uses her magic to spy on their enemy, expecting to see the wizards, but instead see a young man sitting on the throne, exuding evil, who can shoot beams of fire from his eyes like Cyclops. Lupulina realizes greater magics are at work and quickly breaks off the scrying. She reveals that the amulet can teleport Conan to the castle at Falkar, and Conan goes in hopes of finding Themis Herklar. He finds him in the dungeon, a tortured broken man, and discovers that the young man, Unos, was in fact a being of evil magic created by the wizards. Now, Unos was seen in that vision earlier. Suddenly, the two are attacked by subhuman creatures who lurk in the dungeons, and Conan teleports back to his companions, and they vow to bring the wizards down. That synopsis is a little wrong in spots. And like I said, I gave up on trying to change them. I'm like, I'm not an editor. I'm just going to read them, and I can comment on things as we go.
So, listeners, if you were able to listen to that synopsis and not get hypnotized by all of the names and were able to follow what was going on, please, please write in so we can congratulate you. Yeah, the fantasy fiction in general is name salad. Such a common thing.
Yeah.
Boy, we got a lot of names. Multiple names for one person in some cases.
Yeah, like I said, it's just there's just so much story to get through in this one. And
there is.
Yeah. All right, Jason. So what'd you think of this issue overall?
Oh man. Overall, I liked it. Mm-hmm. There were some sequences that I found very effective. There was a lot that happened, so there was a good variety of stuff. You know, you do get the combats, you get the intrigue. I'm reminding myself which issue this happened in by flipping through real quick. Oh yeah, okay. It did come to mind at certain points when you do an adaptation. You know, I never know exactly what is the adapter's responsibility and what was the original source material's responsibility, but I was actually reading not very long ago an interview, I should say, with Claire Noto, who is a writer for Red Sonja back in the 70s. And Roy Thomas created Red Sonja, and he was credited as a writer as well. And this article basically was not very kind to Roy. And it was like, more or less, I don't want, you know, get deep into this, obviously, but more or less that he put his name was on things that he didn't really have anything to do with writing. And there was a quote from him that comics were a really low bar for writing quality anyway. So he didn't feel the necessity. Have you ever heard this?
Yeah, no, oh, okay. Yeah, go for it.
I couldn't help but think, like, I'm literally like, I read that article, that interview just like a month ago, and I'm reading a Roy Thomas comic. And I'm thinking about the quote that comics writing is easy, and so he doesn't have to try very hard. And so then there's some points in the issue where I'm like, well, you probably should have tried a little harder.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not as easy as you thought, apparently. But overall, I like it. And since we've just been talking, we were talking about the design of the creature. It is the same on the interior, but I like it better on the interior. I like Buscema's version a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Being purple is not really the reason, although he is purple. But the main thing is just on the interior, he looks a little less plastic toy and a little bit more living thing textured. Like his little tubules coming out of his back look way better. They look way more kind of sickly wormish, and his teeth look much better. Mm-hmm. Like his teeth on the cover are very clean and uniform, and you know they're all craggly and bent in the interior. His nose looks a little crazier. Like it just, yeah. I prefer the Buscema version of it. He's still goofy, but he's a little scarier, which is good.
The thing that I'm noticing about the so the dual inker team we have on this issue, I do notice there is some, you can see the differences on in some pages. Whomever did the, okay, so Dick Giordano's inks on these issues so far have not been my favorite. So I don't know if it's Austin coming in here and he's the one that's adding the bits I like in this issue. In this opening scene where Conan fights the dweller and is also getting tossed about the garden, the detailing on the plants, the inking on the plants, and even on the dweller in one of the images is so great. It's very detailed and looks really cool. But then the, you know, but then like the people don't. They just look, you know, and not as much care and detail is put into the people. Interesting opening salvo to this book. And the servant wench, as she is called in the in the books,
And nothing else.
she gets eaten by the creature. She does not get eaten in the novel. This issue in particular has the most changes from the novel than any of the other comics in the entire run. And it, I don't know why exactly, other than, you know, he's making room for this 10-page story we got to do. But even then, within there, there's a lot of change, because we do come to learn that, you know, Stefania is basically a princess and she was secreted away. It's a pretty standard storyline. And you know, let's get her back on the throne. And the whole conversation, so there's a conversation where she learns that with Lupulina and Conan, and they're like having drinks and eating after they have taken the castle Ravengard away from the robber baron. Stefania's got a mark on her hip, and that's how the birthmark proves who she is. I do love a lot of those panels in this backstory pages we get, mainly of Lupulina. I think she's got some great posturing and posing and close-ups through that whole sequence. And the thing that I noticed this first time around that I guess I didn't before, and I think it's because you're getting hit with so many names, right? Because during this, you're getting the names of Stefania's parents, you're getting the names of the guy that took over when they died, you're getting the names of the wizards that are advisors, but they're also manipulators.
We've got the evil vizier times
Yeah,
two.
two of them.
We also, I don't know if maybe they weren't mentioned in this issue, maybe it was the next issue, but the
The
demons.
demons, yeah. No, I don't,
There's
I they
a
don't,
couple more names there, crazy names, you
they
know.
come at the end, right? When Conan is talking to Themis. And that's the thing too. So Themis Herklar is part of this plot to fake a landslide and have the king and queen killed so that Themis can take over as regent. What got me this time is Conan is taking the amulet to that dude to protect him from the two manipulating wizards, right? But in the text of the comic, they even say that Themis, he was a pretty good real ruler there for a minute, and then he got distracted by women. The wizards provided him with a woman who distracted him so much that he didn't care about anything else, and then they just kept throwing more women at him, and he built a harem, and that's all he did. And so the fact that let's protect this guy that was part of the bad plot, I like didn't really catch that before, and I was like, well, why the fuck does Madoramon, or whatever I can't remember,
Mordoramon.
Madoramon, why does he want to help Themis when Themis wasn't great at the end there, or hey, didn't have good intentions to begin with? I it just was weird. But then that's the same thing with Lupulina, because Lupulina was known as Samandra and was a sorceress, and she worked with these two dudes too to put Themis on the throne. So
the whole Lupulina thing was confusing to me a little bit, because I don't think that I'm not sure that Roy Thomas knows what lady in waiting means, because Lupulina says that she was the lady in waiting to Chrysala,
the queen,
who was the queen, the Thorman's queen, right? Thorman was smitten with Chrysala and distracted by her, and then Herklar later is distracted by other women or whatever.
Ayila is the
Ayila, okay. Like a lady in waiting is a like the hand servant of royalty, right? And it's the queen, and yet she's a wise woman living in a hut somewhere. That doesn't track at all. She would be living in whatever, like, palace, you know, not in the hut, stirring potions and being all witchy. You know, that was goofy. It was like, it wasn't clear how there wasn't like she was a lady in waiting and then she became a witch, or she, no, it's like, no, she was already that, but somehow also a lady in waiting. That made it even more. I was wondering, like, it seemed to be this endless cyclical plot, because you do have the two wizards. They obviously wanted power, right? They wanted to take over, and they use Chrysala to bring down Thormund, and then Herklar goes into power, and then they do the same thing with him.
Yeah,
it's like, at some point, is there an end game to that, or do you just keep putting people in power and then having women distract them?
Hey, if it works, Jason.
I guess it works. It worked,
right? If it works
more than once,
it works. Keep it going. So it's all money, you know. They give Lupulina Samandra the money, but when they give her the baby, and they're like, "Get rid of this baby."
Yeah,
in the novel, she says, "I'll strangle it and then drop it in a vat of acid."
Okay, that's thorough.
But in this, she you know, gets a decoy baby
in the
fakes
novel,
everybody
she gets
out.
A decoy baby.
But in this one, she just rides off with it to Zoquinor and gives him a bunch of money and says, "Take care of this kid." She said she's got a bunch of retainers with her, so there, it's not like she's the only one that knows that the baby has been,
all these retainers know too.
Yeah, all these. Did she kill all those dudes?
Probably. She does say she's got regrets. Yeah, man. I don't know. It's weird to me in the first place. It was weird to me in this comic when Elvarion or whatever brings the baby to her. Like, was he just squeamish? That seemed contrived so that she could secretly save the baby. Because if they're trying to get rid of, you know, they've rock slided him at this point, and they're trying to get rid of the heir. Wouldn't he just do that? Wouldn't he? He's an evil wizard. Wouldn't he just drop her in a vat of acid?
You would think.
What does he need to go take her to Salamandra for?
I don't know. His hands are clean, man. His hands are clean of it. His hands are clean of it, Jason.
He's got standards. He won't kill. He won't kill babies. That's it.
Yeah. I do like that the flashback panels have a really thick border, real black, thick border. So those panels all jump off the page. And then when they're intermingled with the regular thin panels, I think they stand out really great. I like that a lot. And
good call. I didn't notice that, at least not consciously.
So they use Samandra's crystal ball to spy on the Kingdom of Falkar and see what's happening. And that's where they finally get their first glance of Unos, who is on the throne, and he's very gaunt, thin, blank slate looking of a face guy. In the novel, he's kind of described, Elric came to my mind right away. I was like, with the way that he was described, he's not quite that way in here, but they get to play witness to his power. And then here's the interesting too, Jason, the spying panels, when they're looking through the crystal ball, all have a wide golden panel border. Like it's like a frame just on the spying panels, which is pretty cool.
Oh.
They're doing some fun layout stuff in this issue. I'll give you that much. For I think maybe they're like, man, you know, we got to make this interesting for ourselves since it's just a lot of talking, a lot of introducing the people and stuff like
No,
that.
that's smart stuff. That's good. I like that. I was gonna mention something else that they did later, but yeah, I'll wait for the second one. There does always seem to be, yeah, you're right about the, you know, Unos's appearance, and there is this kind of like, I don't know. We do have Thucomides is a little fat dude. He looks like he'd be played by Philip Seymour Hoffman in the movie version, which would have to have come out more than a decade ago, RIP. But yeah, it's you know, wizards. The more powerful a wizard is, the more physically decrepit he has to be. It's like a universe balancing thing, right? You can't have a magically powerful character that's always also like muscly and robust and has stamina and
So we see him use his eye rays on a guy and pretty much disintegrate him. Lupulina and Conan, they're like, "Eesh, I don't know what this guy is or who this guy is." But then she tweaks the crystal ball some more and they find Themis Herklar imprisoned. And she says to Conan that I can get you to him using the magic amulet you have. I can spread the magic out from the amulet and it'll transport you through time and space here and zap you right through the walls of the prison and you'll be inside and you can fulfill your promise, your job of giving this amulet to Themis Herklar. This
So
is
for
all not in the
none.
book.
Oh, really? Really? Oh, really?
Kothar goes off and sneaks into the place himself
He
because
doesn't
the
get magically transported, though.
yeah at this point they are in the city of Falkar in the novel. All of this scene takes place in Lupulina's little hut shack, but in the novel they're already in the city and they go to like her old digs in the city to do all this. And then so they're in the city, so Kothar is just like, I'm sneaking in.
Okay. He's just, yeah. I'm going to have something to say about the amulet in the second half. But that is good to know. That is going to be very consistent with what I'm going to say about the amulet. So I don't know if this is, I don't think this is stuff that Conan usually says. Maybe this is a Kothar thing. But, you know, of course he says by Crom a lot. But in these issues, they reference, Ishtar a lot, who was
That's
a
normal,
goddess of war and sexual love. And they mention Mitra a lot, who was a god of what?
Beauty, right? And she like
Something. They were both Mesopotamian deities who would have been in around like modern day Iraq and Iran.
that sounds about right because they are the real world equivalents are all escaping me right now when they would be handy to know. But yeah, that's all. Those are gods that he swears by as well, a lot. So they're that's all normal. But yeah,
Okay.
Kothar has his own gods that he swears, same as
Ah.
Conan does. You know, people love to swear by their gods.
They do.
Conan sneaks down and finds Themis, and from him he learns that Unos was created by those other two wizards. He's a construct. A
Made in a
puppet.
vat.
He's a puppet for them to use to rule.
I see. So then, in this iteration of the plan, they're like, "Okay, we've seduced and distracted two rulers. That's not really getting us anywhere. We need one who's going to be a puppet the whole time."
Yeah, we need our own.
Yeah.
Then these like underdweller creatures come pouring out of holes in this caverny prison and swarm Conan, and he's trying to fight him off and everything like that. Conan doesn't scream out, right? Like he's just frustratingly trying to wrestle free of them. And
Yeah,
he
some
gets,
grunting probably, but
yeah,
that's
and
about
Lupulina's like, you got to scream out that you have to scream, Conan, in order for you to escape this situation. And he does, and bang, boom, he's back in the hut. And then that's when they're like, saddle up. We're going to take these dudes out.
It's almost like a fake out, like a, you know, screaming out. It's things of nightmare, and it's like he screams. It's like he wakes up, right? And that's what he thinks. He's like, "Oh, they seem so real." If you've ever cried out in sleep, you, Stefania, you would know what that was like. And then Lupulina just says they were real, and then she just moves on. So it's like, okay, how did you get out by screaming?
I think the whole thing is, I kind of
Is it
wish it
like
was
astral
all, I kind
projection
of
or
wish it was
something?
all done in his mind. You know, and maybe
Yeah,
it is. Maybe
yeah.
he doesn't physically traverse through the air magically and through walls, but then he fights a guard and then he gets down. But that all could be
Right.
all
That's not
made up,
consistent.
right? It
Okay.
astral projects himself and talks to Themis as he's dying. And then his mind is racing and he thinks these creatures grab him, but then, you know, he screams and wakes up. He's actually still there.
I like that too because the creatures don't look very good. They look very like amorphous. They don't look very detailed. They look like just loose, squiggly blobs. That would be consistent with that idea. Like he's not there in body, he's there in spirit. And so they're not fully, like he's not seeing their full physical forms either or whatever. I
Yeah,
like
and
your solution.
that's all different too, because like I said, in the book, Kothar sneaks in, sneaks out. There's no mass swarm of critters. That's enough for issue 50, I think, Jason. I think we did
That is it. We're at the end.
That's it. Yeah, and it says Spawn of
We need another
Devils.
recap. We need some
Yeah, let's do it.
more names.
We got another recap coming here. Okay, so issue number 51, Man Born of Demon is the title. We got a cover by Gil Kane with John Romita alterations. Again, we have the same crew across the board, except for this time, Glynis Wean steps into color. This is the conclusion of Kothar and the Conjurer's Curse. Okay, so Conan shows up at the entrance to Uno's palace with a covered cage, demanding to see the regent to give him a gift. He pushes his way into the palace, and a bored Unos allows him to speak. Conan pulls the sheet aside to reveal a bizarre, magical talking bird who informs Unos that Stefania, rightful ruler of Falkar, still lives and that the previous regent was killed in a plot instigated by the court wizards, Thalcades and Elvirium. The bird also claims that Unos is an unnatural creation of demonic magic formed through the powers of the demons. Here you go, Jason, your new names. Beltham, Quar, and Thelonia. Although the wizards demand Conan's immediate death, Unos halts the guards as Conan has opened his eyes to the wizards' potential treachery. If they plotted the death of one regent, why not another? Away from the castle, the bird turns back into the sorceress Lupulina, and the two wait for the inevitable arrival of Unos, seeking help in defeating the powerful wizards. Lupulina summons the demons, Beltham, Quar, and Thelonia, who, as a single favor to their son, Unos, dispose of the wizards in hideous manners and vanish. Unos, in gratitude, kills Lupulina. Meanwhile, Conan picks up Stefania and rides with her back to Ravengard, knowing that once Unos gets rid of the wizards, he'll turn his attentions to the rightful heir of the province. The two of them pick up the body of Zoquenor, but are set upon by Unos, who uses his powers to blast Conan into a skeleton, but the barbarian miraculously regenerates thanks to his magical amulet. Unos summons vines, I would say they're tentacles, to entrap Conan, then turns to Stefania. Knowing she is tied to the wizard Zoquenor, he blasts the body, injuring Stefania, because they're linked like Tomax and Zaymot. Seeing the girl with writhe in pain gives Conan the strength to break free, and he grasps Unos in a bear hug. The amulet burns through Unos's flesh, killing him. Conan puts the amulet around Stefania's neck, and she revives, and they peace out. She goes back off to rule, and he's like, I'm not set for that, and he bails.
Yeah.
That is issue 51. A lot goes down again. Let's jump into this. I'm going to say, man, now we're at the point where, and I've talked about this on past episodes, where we get the solid border color underneath the title of the book. to help it stand off of shelves when seen in a rack format. And so the bottom half of the cover is an awesome Gil Kane image of Conan chasing Unos up a stair. They're like fighting up a winding stair around a stone column. Unos is doing his Cyclops eye blast. It's yellow, not scarlet like it should be. And I believe he must have Stefania by a chain around her neck, and he's kind of dragging her up. Unos is kind of dragging her up the stairs. This does not happen in the book, but it is a great cover.
Or in the comic, I don't think.
Or that's, yeah, I guess that's kind of what I meant. This does not happen in the story.
Anywhere but on this cover, which is not unusual for covers.
Yeah.
I don't have a ton to say about this cover, to be honest.
Okay.
It's fine.
Big old word box on it that says Unos, the man witch whose eyes deal death. The man witch. I'm ready to have a man witch right now. I'm hungry.
Sloppy Joe.
Yeah, baby.
I mean, the first big page of this comic is with a little bit of alteration, would have been a pretty cool cover too. Obviously, no, you know, without the words and stuff, but
oh, him with the cage and the in front of the
just
guards and
that,
stuff?
That whole thing. That's a cool cover right there.
Sure. It's lacking action though, Jason. I mean, aside from the two menacing guards that have pikes pointed at Conan, who's trying to get into the to see the king with a covered cage carried by a couple shlomos.
It's got incipient action. Well, you know, you could alter it. You could lie. You could have the them being like attacking him, and then you get in the comic and they never do attack him.
They well, threaten they him, actually, and he attacks
actually,
them.
They actually do. Yeah, yeah.
Like he takes a dude out, and then he's got a sword out, which would be covered with blood after wrecking that guard with it, and they just like let him come in to the court holding the sword. Yeah, just let this guy in now after he rocked one of our dudes down.
And the court's right there.
It's
this
doesn't
whole
happen.
Scene, this doesn't happen either.
This doesn't happen in the novel. But other than that, this sticks pretty close to the book.
Does the bird part happen in the novel?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. I have to give credit where credit is due here. When I'm reading this in real time, I'm like, what in the living fuck is going on here? Where did this bird come from? How is it having a full-on conversation? This is not a doomsaying bird. This is like, it's Lupulina. I was like, oh, I should have trusted you.
That's
that
their
was
grand
good.
Plot is to have a fake golden bird with three eyes that can talk and tell the future and the past.
Yeah, and the present, but he didn't care about those.
tell everybody everything in front of the host of people at the court and everything, and the wizards are like, oh shit, this bird is let out our secrets,
throwing us under the bus.
Yep. The wizards call for Conan and the bird to be killed, but Unos is like, no, they actually did me a favor with telling me what you jokers have kind of been up to all this time, and he lets them go free.
Yeah, and here's a not very Conan moment, in my opinion. He's like, I am regent here, Thakalades. The man goes free because his bird has opened my eyes to the truth. And then Conan just says, my thanks, Lord Regent. And then the next panel, he's just walking away. That's not very Conan.
He even threatens Unos. He like charges up to the throne with his sword and puts a sword at the guy's throat. It's so funny to me, like the shit he just gets away with. Like any other like king or kingdom in my mind would be like,
right,
you did the one thing that you're... No.
Yeah, no, nobody is allowed to do. Got a very hands-off policy. And Conan is not very hot-blooded there either. He's just like, oh, thanks. Thanks, Regent. You're a good dude. And they go to drink, which is what people do after they're going to celebrate their success of their plot. Can I mention here, too, you're talking about all the way they use borders, which is interesting to denote flashbacks and stuff. When Lupulina and Unos go to her cellar, there's a panel that shows her opening the door with him behind her, and it's all blue and black because it's dark in the cellar. And I just really love that whole panel. Like, I love the way they simulate the darkness there. I also just love the way the whole thing is drawn, as you're in the room as they come in, instead of being like you're not behind them as they go in. It's just it's understated, but it's a really, really good panel at communicating everything and giving you the mood of that. It's cool.
Yeah, and they summon the two demons, and you come to find out essentially they are the parents of Unos, because they gave life to his construct body, I assume.
Yeah, not sure how that worked exactly. So he
Yeah.
was grown in a vat. So did they get like DNA sampled or something?
Yeah.
Did they excrete into it? What we don't know. It's demon stuff. We don't want to know.
And Beltham-Qarr is just supposed to be like formless black shape of darkness, cold darkness. And he's depicted as like a pair of flying, flaming eye mask
Yeah.
with
Not
like cat eye
yeah.
slits
So we can
surrounded by blackness. But
see where he is.
what's her name? The female demon.
Thelonia or something?
Thelonia. What a great name. Like Beltham-Qarr is a cool demon name, and then
Doesn't trip off the tongue quite
there's
as well though.
Thelonia.
Yeah, and just Thelonia. She sounds like a just some Greek woman.
She's a naked, beautiful woman with long, flowy hair that kind of covers all of the bits that should be covered. Unos pleads to them that, hey, I'm gonna rule, but I need to get rid of these two guys. And the demons do that,
Yeah,
stripping
they
a
do.
dude's body away and taking his soul. The other guy gets formed into a big giant toad demon. It's nasty business. But that's all straight from the book.
Yeah, the way that the first guy goes, ebon fingers which fold about him again and again till they smother even his anguish screams.
Yeah.
Pretty gnarly.
Yeah. And black questing tentacles, Jason, your favorite.
No, I'm ignoring that.
Sorry.
At least darkness tentacles either don't have suckers or you just can't see them.
Yeah, sure. With the wizards gone, the demons bail.
And they tell
So
him, don't ever call us again. We'll call you.
yeah.
That was it. You had one. This will come up later, kind of, in my opinion. Well, at least.
Unos stabs and kills Samandra in. Or Lupulina, Samandra, same gal.
Both.
I don't know why
Yeah.
she had to have two different names. I really
Who
don't.
knows? Who
I mean,
knows?
aside from the fact that
She was on the run.
she was on the run and hiding, and it's like, I'm going to take on this persona as a wolf woman.
Right.
In the book, he stabs her in the stomach. In the comic,
Huh.
stabs her in the back
Well, he's
when she's,
literally backstabbing her,
yeah, backstabs her pretty brutally.
like metaphorically speaking, so I don't dislike that change.
She dies in the comic, but in the novel, she expected treachery and prepared for it, and she lives through it.
I like that, actually.
I do too. I kind of don't like that she is dead at the end of this.
So, brief digression. I like that a lot, and that's one thing that makes this not a Conan story, because it is it stops being tragic and it just starts being annoying when everyone Conan ever comes across dies like that. And there's all often these speeches of like, I didn't even know her name, or like he's upset at the end of this one that she's dead. He wants her to like say something over her grave on his behalf, and then
See, but
there's
he would.
Ennio Morricone music as he rides off into the distance. It's like, yeah, dude, everybody dies all the time.
For someone that he would consider a comrade in this battle and in this quest and this whole thing they've done, I feel like Roy would have written, if this would have been his story, right? He would have written Conan would have seen to Lupulina's funeral. Like he would have been there. In this one, he's just running away from it. And that's a different end to the story as well. They're going back to Raven Guard to get the body of Zoqunor because, again, Stefania if something happens to Zoquinor,
she can die.
So they go to get it, where it had been tossed aside by Torkoal Moe, the robber baron. They pull this stiff, frozen wizard up out of a gully.
He is stiff, too. He's just got it tucked under his arm.
And Unos comes charging at him on
what
a
great
magic,
panel.
On a magic horse. Oh, yeah,
what
of
a,
him riding.
What a great dynamic panel of him showing
man.
up.
I love Bushima draws such
Bushima
great
horses.
Hard riding. You know what I mean? Like a hard ride. He does such a great illustrations of that.
That's true. You can really see. Yeah, you can see that movement in this panel. He just zoomed up.
And I love the attention he pays to like how riders handle their horses, right? So and then in the next page he's bringing the horse to a stop, so he's pulling hard on the rein and the horse is kind of jerked, and then in the next panel he's dismounted but he's still holding the reins and the horse is obviously still fired up from its ride, so it's kind of like shaking. Like, that's all great stuff, man.
That is great detail. It was John Buscema, was he a rider of horses?
That's a good question.
I wonder if he was.
He lived in New York City. Well, I guess they could go somewhere to ride, right? Hamptons? I don't know. The police had him.
I'm going to see if the internet will tell us.
Oh, the internet. And I also think it's very funny that Unos has Cyclops eye beams. For some reason, it's just really funny to me that that's what that guy does. And how he cooks Conan, like strips him. There's a three-panel shot. Conan getting zapped. Middle one, Conan without flesh. He's just all muscle. And then the third one, he's a skeleton. And then it reverses back on the following page.
I gotta admit, I have problems with all this.
It's so goofy.
I'm gonna bring up the amulet thing now.
Let's do it.
So the amulet is way too Deus Ex Machina. And the fact that it didn't even do the whole transporting him into the dungeons thing in the book makes that even worse in this comic. Like, this amulet does no less than reconstitute Conan from a skeleton, teleport him into a dungeon, and then pull him back when he screams, and burn through Unos's chest and kill him. That's it. At the very least, it does those things. I think it might even do more.
It revives Stefania from dying.
It revives Stefania from dying. That's right. Right after this. It's way too useful. Like, it, you know, do one thing really well. You know, like, don't do every magical thing you can possibly imagine so that the characters are under no threat and can do anything. And Conan, of course, is notoriously, famously averse to magic. I don't remember at any point in this where he's like, this foul amulet,
right?
I want to be rid of it. No, it's just like, this magic is so fucking useful. Even Conan is like, yeah, baby.
Yeah, Conan would be so untrusting of this magical thing, like he would almost just put it in his belt, but he wears it the entire time around his neck and like has no problem with delivering this magic bauble or carrying it or anything. And then he had no problem with like looking in the magic crystal ball and like just
that's not Conan at all. The other problem I have with this particular scene is that I don't really care if the amulet could reconstitute you from a skeleton or not. If you were stripped down and disintegrated and then rebuilt, I don't know. I don't know if you would just be like, just business as usual. Boy, that was annoying. Wouldn't that fucking hurt? Wouldn't that be the greatest pain
you would think
a human could ever experience?
All the awesome magic of the amulet, like you said, man.
It also inures him to pain, and Uno starts throwing rocks around when that doesn't work. For some reason, he's inherited the powers of the sorcerers, which I don't quite know how that works.
Yeah, the eye zaps are enough, aren't they?
Well, apparently not. He watched that fail. So if you have eye zaps that can disintegrate somebody and you're trying to ramp it up, do you go to rock?
It works. It disarms him and knocks him down.
You're right. The amulet didn't see that coming. It's like, that's just a rock. What the fuck?
It's a very quickly done combat. All you had to do, I guess, was put the amulet on him, and that's it for him.
He does bring back the eye blasts. After saying that he knows that he needs to stab him, he abandons the stabbing thing very quickly, and he eye blasts.
Eye blast the dead wizard. Nice shot. But that,
The
yeah, that.
almost dead wizard. We're told that he's not quite dead.
It kills the wizard, but Stefania's still able to hang on. And I guess putting the amulet on her breaks the link, I suppose, between her and
Yeah, it's the only way to
Zoquinor, because
really
it's
interpret that, I guess.
no longer a concern. But I guess
That
she's got to wear
right.
that amulet forever now.
I suppose so, yeah.
She's like, I don't know how to rule.
Yeah. And earlier she said that, and he said, "Who does?" And I thought that was a very Conan
That is,
reply.
yeah. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of great dialogue that is Conan dialogue. Oh yeah, Conan would say that. Conan would act that way. But then it's funny that a lot of his actions are Kothar.
Yeah,
It's
exactly.
yeah, it's a really interesting mix. And again, yeah, that's it. Conan rides off. Stefania left holding the thing, broken
Of
heart,
course, in love with
crying a
him,
little
of
bit.
course. If you're either dead or in love with him.
In the book, Kothar does go back with her after grabbing her ass, of course. And she's
Course.
like, can't remember what she gives him a title. She's like, I'll make you whatever.
Oh,
And he's like,
in her court.
yeah. And he's like, sweet, grabs her ass. And then they ride off and they go to, they pick up Lupulina, who's like, yeah, I knew that was coming. I'm cool. And Stefania's like, all right, I want you in my court as well. Then they're at court and Lupulina and Kothar have a side conversation. And she's like, you're going to hate living at court. And he's like, yeah, I know. I'm out of here. And he sneaks out at night and he bails. And that's the end.
He gave it a try very
Yeah.
briefly.
And that is the end
That
of
is
our
the
journey.
end.
What'd you think of this issue?
Nice. Well, other than the few things that I said, which are easily ignored, I liked it.
Yeah.
I even the the betrayal of Unos was very predictable and yet also great. And it was pretty action packed. I liked the demons, although I was more impressed by the darkness one than turning into guy into a big toad. But yeah, no, there's a lot of cool stuff in this for sure. I like Lupulina's whole thing. Once I liked their plot. I like the fact that their bird plot was never explained. Even though it caused me to go, what the hell's going on? I like the fact that we didn't have them, laboriously tell us the plan before we saw the plan. It was just like we were just right into it. The plotting took place between issues.
Like they could have just strode in with Stefania and been like, here she is.
Oh, yeah,
This
she's
is what
there.
happened. The fact that they had to use a magic bird to get this dude to believe them.
But it felt like it was all part of his plan somehow.
Yeah.
I don't know how he would have anticipated that, but he wanted to fall out with his wizards so he could remove his wizards. Oh, the one thing I forgot. So there's a point, oh man, as we've established, and as anybody who reads Conan comics knows, a lot of calling of gods. He is the son of two demons, and he calls on demons, and he literally calls on demons, like the demons show up and everything, kind of Uruk style. And then they tell him, okay, that was it. That was your one. We're done. So then later, when he eye beams Conan and it doesn't work, he says, how can this be? You should be dead. Name of my sire. What demon protects you? So, like, name of my sire is basically saying, by Thessaly or whatever the fuck their name was, But he doesn't say the name itself, he says, name of my sire. And I thought at the time, I'm like, he's saying that because if he says their name, they're going to be like, we told you not to call.
Yeah. The one thing that I've totally passed over at the end of the previous issue when they're talking about how they made him, they made Unos out of a vat. Conan mentions Zoquinor made the stone, he says, Shoggoth before. But in the comic, and in the book, it's Shoggoth is the name of the stone golem he fights. But says Shoggoth twice in the ending of this issue. And I was like, wait a minute. So they didn't even edit their own mistake. It was really funny to me.
I didn't know it was a mistake. I saw Shoggoth and I was like, oh, we got some Lovecraft.
Yeah, no.
Peeking in here.
Fox uses Shoggoth for the name of his creature that they have to fight.
Okay. Huh.
Yes. So there we go, Jason. I think Kothar is another knockoff Conan.
Yeah.
Maybe with a few fresh ideas in there. But for the most part, he's just by the numbers guy.
Yeah, nothing in this story really stood out to me as being, anything that you wouldn't just see in an actual Conan story.
Yeah.
And I
don't like the changes to Conan that Kothar did. So I am going to again say, Conan beats Kothar, at least, in this Battle of the Barbarians. What do you think?
I don't think I'm qualified to say, but I'll stick with you.
Okay, man.
I think there's a reason why
you could say a tie. It's fine.
People know Conan's name.
There's ties.
They don't really know Kothar's name. No, he wins. He wins. But it was good. And Buscema, kicking ass as usual, is always good. Although the letter writer guy doesn't agree.
Oh, which letter are you looking at here?
Robert Kleiman's letter from issue 51.
Okay, yes.
You've got to be kidding. How far downhill can a comic slide? Conan was once the greatest comic ever. Now look at 47. The artwork's a disgrace. Straight from True Love. I don't know what 47 looked like.
He yells about the Tower of Shadows reprint, but
yeah,
that's Wallace Wood. It's awesome. What's this guy talking about?
He just doesn't like that there's a reprint, I guess. And the answer was interesting. They say that the story was lost in the mail between New York and Phoenix. So what would you have had us do? Leave the pages blank? I didn't expect such a actual specific answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
I was just because comics having reprints is not exactly, terribly unusual back then. Like it happens. They're like, no, we didn't plan on that, but it's because of this.
Yeah, 47 and 48 are partial stories. There's a couple different sources that say a couple different things. Thomas claims that he doesn't remember what happened, but then in the Epic collection that contains this issue in the Stand soapbox, there's a whole thing there that explains what happened. And yeah, they didn't have the all the pages, and so they had to put in a couple different backups for those two issues. I'm going to be talking about those backups because they're awesome, and I feel they deserve a look at as well.
Said Wally Wood.
Yeah, but it's not. They're not. They have no effect on the story, so they're going to wait till we're done with all this action.
Gotcha.
Okay, Jason. Thanks, man. Thanks for sitting through that with me and going through those books. And
thank you. It was fun
reading all that good times. So
I don't need a huge excuse to read Conan comics.
Yeah. And I'm sure this won't be the last time you'll be around. We'll have you back again. Support your local comic shops. Support your local public library.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important. Until next time.
Keep your amulet close.
Excellent. I love it. That's great. All right, man. Thank you.
Thanks.